free-minded, patriotic Americans. This program is not White House approved.
Here we are right here on the Mix 1470 KCD. And another edition of the Get It Off Your Chest talk show, the last one for this week. And so, there we have it. How are you doing this morning? Good. We got a busy show the entire hour, this hour and next hour as well. So we'll get to that. We got Superintendent Lukens with us today. Good morning. Yes. Uh-oh. I've got to turn your mic on or you will not be heard.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Now, see, these all changed the last time I did this, so we'll see if I can find this. Okay, try that.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, boy, that sounds good.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah. All right, we're ready to roll.
Time flies when you're having fun. Last Thursday of the month rolls around real quick.
Yeah, we just did this.
Seems like it.
Yeah, and we were just talking off air a little bit about it was prom weekend last weekend, and banquets.
Yep. I was the administrator on duty at prom. Beautiful job by the kids and the advisors. Did a very nice job. And the FCCLA banquet was Monday night and had a very successful FCCLA team. All credit to Mrs. Walsh and for their great performances at their state and qualify for nationals. Baseball, as you can hear right here on KHND, has been doing well. I heard a comeback win against Dunseith the other night. Track and field, you know, one of those. I love track and field because there's no one you can ever blame in those events. If it is to be, it's up to you.
Yep.
And so one of those wonderful life lessons that kids learn, and so that's going well.
We're winding down the school year almost. I mean,
there's a lot going on.
Yeah,
there is a lot going on, and the school year is ending, and May 1st is next week.
I know it. Now, does it just me, or does as you get closer to the end of the year, more stuff happens quicker?
Because you have people forget things that they need to do, and those type of things kind of get out there. You know, our teacher contracts end in May, so they have to get things covered. And then, and also as far as activities go, we know that the weather is usually nicer in May than it is in April, so that things tend to be scheduled more condensed in May. And so...
And the spring sports can't start until it actually gets spring.
Yeah, but we were lucky. Like I said, I think the last time I was on, I said we played our first baseball game on April 4th. And so we've had one rain out, and I think that's being rescheduled as far as baseball goes. Track got to be outside right away. I know that it has been dry, but as far as kids' participation in sports, this has been one of the more ideal springs in a long time.
So we got track and field going on at that time. We got baseball going on. We've got all kinds of outdoor activities. I assume the golf.
The
drama, that's right.
Frozen Junior is going on actually tonight, possibly, for the last night.
Any speech tournaments or something coming up?
Our speech, it was the regional champion.
Yeah.
Hats off to Coach Storbeck and her great work. I drove to the Park River meet. I drove a bus up there a couple Saturdays ago, and they just did a fantastic job competing with some of the best teams in the East that weekend. Mm-hmm. I believe the next weekend they went to regionals and won the region in speech. And so, really, really talented kids, but you also got to tip the hat to the seniors. We have a very talented senior group. It was reported at the board meeting that our ACT test scores are up, and that really, that really speaks a lot to the class that we have right
good,
now.
Good. Well, the thing about this, too, and I've said this before, as I've watched these kids go through the last 10 years here, there's been some really good kids going through here and really good classes. And, there's, a group of kids, no matter where they are, whether they're 18 or 28, not every person is going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And even though that may be true, the representation that they're doing for the school was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really great. I think it's super. Harvey High School always has people look at him and say, that's really a good school, because these kids, they're not out there trying to cause mayhem. They're trying to do their work, get on to the college, get a job, whatever they're doing, which is what they're supposed to be doing. So that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's some of the many things that are going on at the school. I want to remind everyone, I put out a publication that kids in elementary school under the age of 12 get a free hot dog and drink and chips at baseball games, baseball games.
Okay.
So if there's parents or grandparents out there and they want to take their kid that's under, I think we said ages 4 to 12.
Okay.
Can stop by the concession stand on a home baseball night, enjoy the game, and the kids will get a hot dog, bag of chips, and a drink for free.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and so then grandparents will have to buy something there, but the kids are going to eat free. And so make sure you come out, support the Hornets, and cheer them on as they're having a wonderful baseball season.
Yeah, they are. They really are. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Now, the baseball season, that actually goes longer than the school term, doesn't it?
Yeah, typically.
Or at least a few weeks.
State baseball will usually be the end of May, early June.
Yeah.
And so, and track will be the same. Track is usually that Memorial Day weekend, somewhere around there. I'm not, off the top of my head, I don't know the exact dates, but that's the way it's typically worked in most schools I've been.
So. Yeah. So, cool. That's excellent. Anything other that we got to know about for the school year coming up here? We're just kind of closing out, I guess. What's the big things? We got the prom already done.
Prom's done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Graduation.
Music concerts are coming up on the 9th and the 16th, I believe.
All right.
So that'll come before I'm on here again. Yeah. Be interesting when I have to do these and I don't have activities to talk about over the summer.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about other things.
Well, we can pull dandelion weeds.
There you go.
And when is graduation this year?
It's the Sunday, I believe Sunday the 25th or Sunday the 26th. I would have to double check on it, but I believe it's the last Sunday of the month.
Yep. There is a Sunday. The last Sunday would be the 26th, so that would be it, yeah. And that's just, yeah, we're only a few days. We got to get rid of a couple days here, and we're in the month of May.
You bet.
That's fast.
Yep.
It's fast. Too fast for me.
Yep.
Let's see. Anything else we need to cover?
No. Come out and support the Hornets. Like I said, we want our fans out there. And if you want to check in on those free hot dogs and chips for kids, make sure you come out to the field and watch a baseball game. And
take the kids, and they'll get used to going out to some of those things as they get older, and they will know it's a lot of fun.
It's part of culture, building a culture.
Exactly. So, Superintendent Lucas, thank you very much. We'll talk to you
last Thursday of the month,
whatever it is. Whatever it is. It'll be another month.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. See ya. Bye.
And the Get It Off Your Chest talk show continues, and we're going to be coming up here with Kurt Junt coming up here a little after 10:30, so that'll be coming up here in just a moment.
RV. It's the Get It Off Your Chest radio talk show. Conservative talk for Central North Dakota.
Very pleasant good morning as we are in here on a Thursday. Rick is absent today. He's in Iowa. And so I'm sitting in the air chair, which is about 4 feet off the ground compared to what it was when I used to sit on here. It was only 2 feet, so it's grown. The chair is taller. Yeah, all right. Anyway, we have guests with us today via the magic of telephone. We have Kurt Junt with us. We talked to him last week a little bit. Hi, Kurt. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Well, how's your week gone since we talked last?
Busy, but yeah. Good.
Well,
yep, enjoying the sunshine today, and of course, some very much needed precipitation tomorrow.
Yes, that's it. Perfect weekend. I think we're looking pretty good. So, Well, that's we're talking about the pipeline situation. Where are we standing with it right now? If somebody just joined us, didn't maybe hear us talk about this last week, where are we actually with this this carbon capture pipeline?
Well, right now, this week on Monday was the fourth public hearing. We had three in 2023. But then the PSC on August 4th rejected the application, and then Summit filed for a reconsideration, which the PSC then gave them that reconsideration, and the chair of the PSC said, you know, this would prevent having to basically reestablish a brand new docket, which I think has, the docket now has well over 300 entries in it. Probably one of the most technically difficult, probably the most publicly opposed, I would have to say probably the longest docketed case ever to come before the PSC. Very complex in many ways, from not only the, you know, being the first ever of this type of a CO2 pipeline. It's not the first CO2 pipeline in the state. Okay. But it is the first of its kind. There is no CO2 pipeline that is 2,200 plus miles covering, crossing four states by a first ever company started by ag folks. No offense to ag people. I come from that background, and I love our ag and ranching people tremendously. But, you know, I'm not somebody who's going to decide to go, you know, build a egg processing facility.
Right.
You know, that's not the industry I come from. So this is, you know, there's a lot of firsts here, and it's probably the most highly opposed application ever to come before the PSC. So the fourth hearing, because of the reconsideration, the PSC set forth three more public hearings. The first one was Monday, and it was, they had set aside the whole week, but Summit only brought forth two witnesses, and then the public got to speak, and it was all done by, I don't know, in the 5 o'clock hour. So there's nothing else happened this week. The next one will be May 6th, I think. May 6th, and the next one's going to be in June. May will be in Wahpeton, and June will be in Linton.
Okay.
And Emmons County and Burley County have been the two most significantly opposed to this, and there's a reason. That's because we have the 24-inch high-pressure pipeline running through Emmons and Burley County, where the rest of the other eight counties are dealing with 4 to 6, maybe an 8-inch pipeline.
Okay.
Not there's no comparison, because the 24-inch pipeline is going to carry as much CO2 capacity is 15 plus 8-inch lines. So you can see why we around in Burley and Emmons County are dealing with, you know, kind of the biggest risk of this whole thing.
So basically, when you're talking a pipeline that big, if there is a leak in that, it's going to affect a lot of people in a lot of area real fast.
Well, that depends on who you ask.
Okay.
If you ask Summit and their expert witnesses, only people within about 500 feet of the pipeline may have to be dealing with emergency response. But if you ask expert witnesses on our side, on the opposition side, who are just basically trying to seek the truth, and that's really what we want our North Dakota PSC to do, is to seek the truth and not believe everything you get from just one side.
Right.
And you know, safety, health and safety, and economic impacts to towns, cities, landowners along this route are our biggest concern. First and foremost, the health and safety of our residents, our lives and our animals and livestock and show horses and cattle. These are the things that come number one. But right next to that, that is a very significant concern, are the economic financial impacts that can come to our landowners that especially this thing crosses their land. I mean, there are letters that have been provided to in testimony from the public, from insurance companies, where no different than my home here in Burleigh County, mm-hmm. I have exclusions on it. I have always known this, that anything that happens to my property from a terrorist attack or from something that is not an active nature is right. not covered.
Right.
And if and one of the things the landowners are finding out is that hazardous, toxic hazardous pipeline like this, if they their tractor sinks down and you know how many tons of tractor load hits the top of the pipe and happens to break it at a weld, it's 4 feet to the top of pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Their insurance company will not cover any of the damage. That pipeline will have to be shut down. That's millions of dollars of lost revenue to the, you know, tax credits. It's really not revenue, but tax
credits
for every ton they put in every day that they'll lose, and they're going to be looking for that landowner to pay that. Plus, the guy in the tractor that hits the pipeline and it ruptures, well, he's not going to care because he's long gone. Just keep in mind that 4% concentration by volume, CO2 is 1.53 times heavier than air, so it's going to drift. It's going to come up as it from the. It goes through a number of phases, from mm-hmm. the liquid phase to a dry ice phase. That's the white you see erupting out of a CO2 pipeline. As it warms in the air, it becomes a gas, and then it will drift to the ground. It's 1.53 times heavier than air, so. I mean, that anyone nearby that tractor, if it hits it there, or construction equipment,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to survive, because well, yeah. at 8% you have minutes to be rescued, and at 4%, I mean, anything around a rupture is going to be 100%, you know,
yep.
pretty bad. So they're not going to have insurance. That's the financial impact, and also the potential for, you know, valuation. Devaluation of landowner property that the pipe traverses or nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some will tell you, well, there's nothing proven on that. Well, again, what I'm telling you is, for a lot of us here in Burleigh and Emmons County, we've never had to deal with this kind of a pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of firsts here. So, you know, that's been our challenge. We're hoping that the PSC, we don't believe they have anyone technically capable to reevaluate Summit's plume studies,
okay.
and you can call it dispersion or plume studies, but we're hoping that the PSC does contract with some third-party non-biased source to mm-hmm. do a peer review of what Summit's doing, because our side, the opposition expert witnesses on the interveners for landowners, is showing mm-hmm. substantially different modeling results. And I can even give you an example
yep.
that doesn't even come from Summit or from our side, but Navigator Pipeline, I mentioned this on the show last week,
mm-hmm.
Navigator Pipeline that was canceled they were going to sequester in Illinois. They provided to, I believe it was the South Dakota PUC, Public Utilities Commission, they provided a map showing an area of, impact, if you want to call it an impact area. It was a gray area that straddled each side of their 8-inch line, 1,855 feet. 8-inch line, 1,855 feet, mm-hmm. Moving, you know, high pressure.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, even though I'm an engineer, I'm going to just be pretty simple about this. Now, if I equate that to a 24-inch pipeline
mm-hmm.
running at 2,183 PSI, that's equivalent to 15 of those 8-inch lines.
Wow.
How many feet each side of that would you extrapolate that out to be?
Well, it certainly would have to be a much larger area, because you're pushing a lot more of that that gas out faster and bigger.
Like,
yeah.
Correct, 15 times more.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're just trying to seek the truth here, and we want our PSC to seek the truth. But right now what's been happening is the public, who doesn't have billions of dollars behind it, and landowners who are just going about their business, running their ranch, running their farm, taking care of their families, taking care of their horses, their livestock, getting ready to, you know, this has been going on for two and a half years. Mm-hmm. I think they started contacting landowners fall of 21, if I'm not mistaken. They filed their application with the PSC October of 22. Just to give you a timeline, but This has created a tremendous amount of hardship, both emotional stress for folks. I've talked to them. I don't know if the PSC has talked to them. I know they've heard from the landowners in public testimony, so they have heard about the impact to those. But there's a lot of elderly, senior, 70 and older that still live on the farm, and their sons and grandsons farm and ranch it, that, you know, didn't have the courage or wherewithal to go sit up in front of hundreds of people and provide public testimony. So I've talked to a lot of these people who have not provided public testimony, and I hear their stories and I hear their distress. And, you know, this is what I want our PSC to do, is to seek out the truth and, like Reagan said, trust but verify.
Yes.
And that does, you know, that means not only what Summit provides, but what we as a public provide too. And, you know, the state's been pouring millions of dollars in subsidizing all of this, and $300,000 for an indoctrination campaign to the people. We certainly can spend a little more money at the PSC to have an expert do the plume study, because it's not just an engineering feat when you do CO2 dispersion plume, because you have to take in many, many variables. And I can tell you, as a mathematician engineer, the most difficult problem we ever have to solve is a multivariable equation. Now, a plume model has dozens of variables. Terrain, pressure and temperature of the CO2 in the pipe at the time of rupture, atmospheric conditions, barometric pressure, humidity, temperature, wind direction, wind speed. So you factor all these in, that affects the plume and how far the plume will go in a concentration that is lethal to humans and animals. So anything above 8%, you have minutes to be rescued. 10%, you're pretty much not going to survive. It's like jumping in a swimming pool. How long can you hold your breath? And I'm not Chicken Little. I said this last week. I'm not trying to be Chicken Little in scare tactics. I think there's a lot of scare tactics being used by the other side in why we need this. Well, and that,
One of the questions that just popped into my mind when we were talking about this, there are people who are really pushing for this. And who all are pushing to have this done? Is it just the oil explorers, or is it somebody else that's involved in that too?
Well, the start of this was, I want to say it was probably, it was started by Bruce Rassetter in Iowa, who owns, I don't know, six or more ethanol plants. And he owns, or maybe more than that in Iowa, but he owns a bunch of them in Brazil too. But he's made a fortune on ethanol, and we've been subsidizing ethanol since 1978, and it still can't stand on its own. So I'll let everybody interpret that however they want. But when I say subsidies, that's our tax dollars, and our national debt is increasing about $1 trillion every 100 days. So anybody that runs a business knows you can only keep going in debt so long, and
something's
going to
get the
wall.
Give.
But,
right.
So the push of this came from probably maybe a governor's meeting where North Dakota has done work. DOE started a carbon safe initiative, and I think this effort started back real steadfast in 2015 on the carbon safe. If you Google carbon safe, that was the money coming from the DOE funding carbon safe that involved the UND's EERC. And then involved in that were private sector, Halliburton, and these are great companies. Halliburton, Schlumberger, there were, I think, Minkota Power was one of them. You know, the whole sequestering of coal and the 45Q credits over the years and administrations that it's come out was kind of a way for the fossil, for the administration to kind of keep our coal industry alive. To help them sequester. Now, our coal industry in North Dakota does not need this pipeline. And anybody that tells you it does, that they do not need this pipeline at all. To sequester, to capture and store underground, no different than Red Trail Energy, the ethanol plant at Richardton, is doing their own storing. I think it's 300 to 400 tons a day. Now, keep in mind, Summit ultimately is going to be doing about 50,000 tons a day.
All right.
into a formation called the Broom Creek in Oliver and Mercer County. Now, again, that's never been done before either, so there's been a lot of research into that.
Yep,
So you see a lot of firsts here, right?
Right, I see it. Well, yeah, now, you know, one of the things that you brought up here also is, and I understood when this first started, that they could store this CO2 down and they could get out and use it to help fracking and drilling. And then I heard another study that said that once that carbon dioxide is put down in the rock formations that are way down low, I don't know, they're a long way down, but they would attach themselves to the rock and you can't get it back out, which is true.
Correct. Yeah, so one thing I want everybody to know is that what Summit says is true. They're bringing CO2 from ethanol plants. That was the initial push for this whole thing. They want to bring it up from, it's up to 57 ethanol plants, just one from North Dakota. That's at Castleton, Tharaldson. Mm-hmm. That is true. They get the 45Q credit of $85 a ton when they stick it down in the ground. And that's the Broom Creek Formation in Oliver mm-hmm. Mercer County, and it spreads a lot of the Williston Basin. The formation is not homogeneous. It's not one perfect blanket, you know, same rock matrix lithology. It changes like every formation ever in the Williston Basin. Changes in elevation, changes in rock matrix. But the work they did was focused in Oliver and Mercer County, where the main injection wells will be.
Right.
When that CO2 goes down a mile and a half, anywhere from over a mile to a mile and a half, so about 7,000 feet below surface, it's going to go into that at, I don't know, several thousand PSI.
Okay.
And there is a water content, like almost every formation in North Dakota. We produce, every oil well has oil or produce water with it we dispose of.
Okay.
And it's usually saline, you know, high salinity. Mm-hmm. So that CO2 will mix with that, and it will... The CO2 will change in composition. It will probably form a carbonic acid and etch its way through the rock and pore space, but it'll change in chemistry, and that you will never want to withdraw that.
Okay.
So at the end of 12 years, it is thought that the oil industry may be ready and have figured out how much CO2 they're going to need. And here is a 98% pure source sitting right up at the eastern margin of the Williston Basin.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory and concept, it's like, wow, the timing could be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You can understand why the oil industry is definitely now on board pushing this, because when this all started, especially through the testimony of 2023, the public was like, we don't want to be a dumping ground. There was such pushback, and Summit was basically failing to convince the public that this was something we need when there's only one ethanol plant. We're bringing all the CO2 from, you know, four other states. So the oil industry got involved and the ag industry got involved, and they formed this Friends of Ag and Energy, and they, you know, that we got to show North Dakotans that, you know, this is vital to our ag industry. And I'm going, oh, really? You got one ethanol plant going in? Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more. And then, oh, this is vital to our oil industry. Huh. Well, just today in the Bismarck Tribune, the Department of Energy has now given the EERC at Grand Forks $11.6 million for research in using CO2 for enhanced oil recovery. Okay, they don't know what the secret sauce is yet.
Yep.
The oil industry doesn't know how much they're going to need compared to what we could produce in North Dakota. And they don't know how it's going to be used. Are they going to blend it with produced wellhead gas, with dry residue gas that we burn in our homes? Are they going to blend it with nitrogen? We use nitrogen in fracking. So this is another thing that it's kind of a tough pill for me to swallow coming from that industry. It's like, so you're telling us how vital this is, and that you know, if we don't have this pipeline, the oil industry is doom and gloomed in at least 12 years when primary production becomes economic across a lot of the Williston Basin. You know, there's so many things that are variables in this, what I call known unknowns. And then the known unknowns are, we don't know how the CO2 is going to be used. We don't know when it's going to be needed. And also, we don't know what other technologies are going to come into play here that can extend primary production. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the laterals now, the horizontal laterals are out to 3 miles from a well pad.
Wow.
And they could refrack a lot of the older wells. There's, you know, with new chemicals and new technology. Mm-hmm. So there are new technologies that would be way less costly and way more economic and to just do more enhancements of existing wells with new technology. That's another known unknown, if you will. The three big pushes for this, the coal industry is behind it. They don't need the pipeline. The oil industry is behind it. That's a huge, you know, question mark, you know, up there. The ag industry is going to fail, really. I mean, now I can see why Bruce Ratsetter in Iowa and all those ethanol plants down there, you know, are touting that they need this, because Bruce Ratsetter is going to get 55 cents to a dollar a gallon right off the bat when the CO2 comes, is sequestered off of his plants. So there's and that's 45Z credit. So this is about an industry, coal, oil, ag, who has definitely paid in a tremendous amount of taxes in the history of our state. No argument there.
Yep.
I come from that industry, and it appears to me that those three industries are saying, you know what? We want that money back, you know, to pay for, finally to get some of that money back to pay for a pipeline. You know, we've been paying in. We want some of that back and use it to what could end up being the benefit.
But we don't
to the oil industry.
Yeah.
But no, we don't know.
Well, the interesting thing is, too, I think, is if we're so uncertain about this, and we have this big push from the other side to get this done, and they brought in ag and they brought in oil, all we end up with this muddied water situation where is the truth? Do we really need it? No, I don't think so. At least in my opinion, I don't see any. No one's shown me on a piece of paper saying, "Well, we got to have this." No, that doesn't exist that I can see.
Well, and this is just my First Amendment opinion from being involved in this for 18 months. Do we need this CO2 pipeline? Mm-hmm. No, we do not.
Mm-hmm.
Will it impact anything with the coal industry right now? Will not. Will it impact our ag industry? They talk about Tharaldson Ethanol wanting to do the sustainable jet fuel business.
Right.
That, by the way, that's another. If the ethanol plants take this CO2 and start making sustainable jet fuel, I don't. That's another thing that scratches my head, because I don't know, to make sustainable jet fuel, they use their own CO2, but I don't understand. That's a whole new thing that I've not researched, that seems kind of murky to me, but that's a whole nother pitch, is we need to do this for sustainable jet fuel. So I don't know. Right now, I think I just want the truth. Mm-hmm. To be sorted out by our PSC. I want, if they're going to do this, and it's, you know, we have so many of our politicians, state and federal, that are for this, and if this has to be done, we that are trying to push back on this, we just want it done so there's not huge impacts to our city, our schools, our towns, and landowners. And I think it could have been sited, routed a whole different way. The approach could have been done different.
Yep.
But I think that's what happened. And I have been very critical of that. That's what happens when an egg company, you know, tries to build a pipeline.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, but I, you know, they did hire a whole group of engineers and technical people, very qualified technical people, brought them in from God knows where. A lot of them don't even live anywhere close to their headquarters. So, I just think still that it's
more questions
one of
than
my,
answers.
It's one of my biggest concerns is just the whole approach to this thing and the impact it's having in Emmons and Burley County, even though they moved the route north, is still pretty substantial. It still is too close to the east side of Bismarck.
Well, Kurt, I appreciate the time that you would be able to give to us. There's still more we could talk about. I don't think we've scratched the surface enough, but at least what I'm hearing, the fact is, there's a lot of ifs and questions and things, and we just have to, I really hope that the PSC pays attention and not try to just shove this down because they decide they're going to do it. And that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, and I think they definitely are paying attention. And you know, no matter where the pipeline goes, the emergency response and the amount of equipment that our emergency responders need and the education is so vitally important. And then we have to educate every citizen on an ongoing basis. So, like Sulphur, Louisiana, when you get a text on your phone that says shelter in place, that you know what that means.
Yep, exactly.
So there's so much, around the health and safety and that's, and the economic impacts, and that's what we've been really battling here.
I know it.
We take a significant exception to the way they routed it east and north of Bismarck, where they're crossing the Missouri River. And, you know, their explanations why they've done that are not sufficient to me at all. So.
Well, we're going to have to cut this one short because we are out of time. But I appreciate the time that you spent with us and given us a lot more things to think about. But I think we need to revisit this again. If anything comes up that really makes a change in things, we need to get together and chat again on the radio and give people an idea of what's going on.
Sure, happy to.
A real American, fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American, fight for what's right.
The governor and I, and we were all doing a tour of the library here. And
get hot! I got a lot of. I got hairy legs that turn that turn blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight, and then watch the hair come back up again.
What difference at this point does it make?
Free-minded, patriotic Americans. This program is not White House approved.
And this is the second hour of the Get It Off Your Chest talk show here on a Thursday. Rick Jensen is absent today, so we're flying solo. And that's fine. He sometimes gets us, you know, in the corner, and I can't. That's where I sit, in the corner. So I get to be out free roam. I'm a free roaming announcer today, so that's kind of good, I guess. And we have a special guest here for us for this hour, Rick Becker from Fargo. Rick, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. We're great to have you on. We haven't talked to you in a while. How's the campaign going?
It's going great.
All right.
I'm running.
Go ahead.
Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Yes, I'm running for Congress, and it's going very, very well. Reception is wonderful. Message is resonating. Endorsements coming out of the woodworks. You may know I've got an endorsement from Senator Rand Paul and from Representative Thomas Massey, from Vivek Ramaswamy, from Bob Good, who's the chair of the House Freedom Caucus, and about 10 other House Freedom Caucus members. So I couldn't be happier with our campaign.
That's really good. That's good to hear. Now, the other thing, too, we need to talk about, you're going to be in Harvey here tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. There is a gathering with District 14. I think all are welcome in Harvey tomorrow evening, and I'll be there. Some other local candidates will be there as well. And so it's a great opportunity for people to come out, ask questions. I've always been one. I appreciate when people ask questions, even if they're challenging questions. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than when people can get answers straight from the candidate instead of having it be filtered through ads and so forth.
It's less chance of miscommunication.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, you have to separate the wheat from the chaff, and especially when you have the opposition, and you know, there's so much spin put on things. It's just crazy.
Well, yeah, well, that's just spin. We could spend an hour just talking about the spin, I guess, in one way or the other.
But that tomorrow, I should mention, I pulled it up. I had to get it on my calendar here. It looks like it's at 7 o'clock at the Eagles Club in Harvey. 7 o'clock tomorrow at the Eagles Club.
Yeah, and I think at 6 o'clock, they're going to have a kind of a get-together before the meeting get-together.
All right. Well, I'll have to try and make it. I'm going to be up in Grand Forks, so I'll zip back down.
Yep. And that's going to be good. And if people who are listening to this and know about it, bring your questions. You know, don't wait till the moment that it happens and figure, well, I should ask a question. Think about it. What is important to you? What's important to you as a representative or a senator for what are you going to be doing? And then ask the question and get an answer from the candidate. And that's your choice. That's a chance to really get on the grassroots end of things.
Yep, you bet. It's nothing better than getting it straight from the horse's mouth.
Exactly. Now, what are some of the things that you're dealing with that are on your plate as far as what you are telling people, you're a candidate, and these are the things that I'm standing for? Where are we at with all those things? I know there's probably tons of them, but...
Yeah, there's a bunch, but, you know, I mean, what's kind of nice is that, you know, I was a state legislator for 10 mm-hmm. years.
That's right.
And I was pretty bold and pretty brash, and I stood on principle, mm-hmm. and, you know, that didn't necessarily always play well with the establishment leadership, mm-hmm. and I was okay with that, but I always stood for the same principles, and that's what I plan to carry forward in D.C. Right. So those principles, number one, would have us, it's very simple, stop spending money we don't have.
Yeah,
the willingness for our elected officials to find excuses time and time again to put us further into debt is just maddening, and that has to stop. This debt is so far beyond what we could ever pay back. This is debt we're putting on our children and grandchildren, and it's the biggest threat we have to our nation, bar none. And so it has to stop. We must stop deficit spending. We need to slowly bring this debt under control, or we will definitely lose our country. So a person, a congressman, to try and have that effect must be someone who will stand on principle, someone who will say, no, I'm not voting
right.
for this omnibus spending bill with all of this other crap in it. They have to see what's interesting is one of the big reasons politicians will vote yes on a spending bill is because it includes something that's good that people want and includes 10 other things that are crap.
Mm-hmm.
But the elected official is afraid to vote no, because in politics, then that can be used against them. Even though it's the right thing to do, they won't do it. Well, you need to have someone with a spine who understands this and will stand up and say, no, I'm voting no on this. Let's bring this good part back separately.
Yep.
Let's do the right thing for the people. Let's vote yes on this. But I am not going to be held hostage by this one thing so that you can pass these 10 other terrible things.
Yeah.
So it takes someone with a spine. So spending's a big one. The border wall is very easy. It blows my mind that we don't have a secure southern border yet.
Well,
this goes all the way back to 2018, 2019,
yes.
when
yes.
we had control of the House and the Senate, and yet we collapsed somehow and did effectively a McConnell-Schumer bill that had no border wall funding.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't get it.
Well, you know, you look at this $95 billion that was just passed here this last week. There was nothing in there to go against the border problem that we have. And that's,
yep.
to me, is just as much dangerous as the stuff, you know, because they were saying, well, we got to fund Ukraine because, you know, Russia could put itself together and be a meanie. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
They can't even defeat Ukraine. I think it's a paper. I think right now, except for the fact that they have nuclear weapons, outside of that, their armed forces is pretty much a paper tiger. Or this would have been over a year and a half ago.
Exactly. So, and, you know, that's a big, big topic. And we mm-hmm. had, when I say we, I mean the Democrats and definitely Biden, Joe Biden, when he was vice president, had a hand in installing this puppet government, this corrupt government that's in Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
So, sure, is Putin a bad guy? You bet. But this is way more complex than what we're led to believe by mainstream media.
Yes.
So the idea that we're going to go further into debt, borrow money from the likes of China to hand it over to Ukraine, a country that's rife with corruption, and there's no accountability, there's no oversight. We know that there's a ton of fraud, but the elected officials are willing to do it. Would they do that with their own money? No.
Oh, heavenly.
They would not.
No.
but they're happy as hell to do it with our money.
Well, because they figure they're isolated from that. It's I didn't do that. It's we have to, you know, there's always reasons. And they can find one, and they'll pull it right out of thin air if they have to make a reason to do what they're going to do. And that's why, you know, how do we get to the point where these bills have so many things on them? Is it expediency because we can get seven or eight things passed at once? Or is it the only way that these people can get a bill through when it's attached to something that they know people really like and you can throw the bad one in there with it? How does that start?
Well, it's about not having any integrity, not having a spine. It's not about efficiency. They are not able to bring things up individually and debate them and pass them for the public to see.
Right.
It's all backroom deals. It gets thrown into one huge bill that everyone is afraid to vote no on. And that's why we are $35 trillion in debt.
Now, we take a look at that $35 trillion in debt. What happens if this thing keeps growing? Normally, if you or I were doing this with our own finances, there would be a point of no return. Nothing happens. We're going to be done. What happens to the government when we are $35 and $40 trillion in debt? Because the government's us. We owe ourselves the money. It's just crazy.
Yep, absolutely. Well, and it's not just... It's, you know, there are foreign nations that mm-hmm. have taken on the dollar, and so they hold some of our debt as well. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is that with the interest rates up, the interest or the amount of debt service on our debt is exploding. And so that's getting larger and larger and larger to the point that all of our tax dollars are eventually going mm-hmm. to nothing more than paying the interest on the debt we owe and aren't even going to the actual services government should be providing. So that's a proposition in which we're looking at something really apocalyptic as far as the economy goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a sorry state of affairs. Is there any hope of us ever getting to the point where we can actually start to reduce that debt? Or can we hold it that way? Is anybody even talking or looking about it? I know the current administration isn't.
No. Well, there are a few people that look at it. You look at, say, the proposals brought out by Senator Rand Paul, Senator Mike Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not getting out of the debt very quickly or anytime soon. There's nothing dramatic. This is going to take years and decades to get out of debt. But if you start with trying to stop deficit spending, in other words, going further into debt, you just stop going further into debt. That's a huge thing we can do. Mm-hmm. Then Lee and Paul have these plans that will, over the course of 10 years, really bring that debt down. So you have people that are willing to do it, people that are willing to cut the federal government, people that actually realize this is a long-term concern for future generations. The thing is, they're labeled extreme, far right, they're just trying to get attention.
Yeah.
It's not that they care about the country, not that they care about the future, not that they have integrity. They're just trying to get attention. But that, of course, is according to the country club, old guard establishment,
mm-hmm.
Uniparty.
Mm-hmm.
So now the thing is that there are people in D.C. There's not a ton of them, but there are several out there that are fighting to do the right thing. That's why it's important, for instance, in North Dakota, to send me so I can join them. Because once there's a few more, we get a critical mass and you can actually force.
That's right.
Force this uniparty to do the right thing.
Well, we got a hard break coming up. Can you stay with us for a few minutes here, and then we'll continue on? All right. We're enjoying a conversation with Rick Becker, and we'll be back with more.
Hey, Bentley, I have more exciting news for you.
No way. What is it?
We have another new restaurant in town.
Seriously? Where at?
118 West 8th Street in the former Spectators Building, the Hometown Tavern.
Mom, I'm not old enough to go in a tavern.
Bentley, it's a family-friendly restaurant until 9 p.m.
What are they serving?
Monday is Build Your Own Burger, Wednesday is Jess's Home-Cooked Meals, And Saturday is steak, prime rib, chicken, and seafood. Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday is Just Good Barbecue, and Sunday is a fun day.
Mom, no cooking for you tonight. Let's go.
To get your supper fix, come see us at the Hometown Tavern.
Mmm, I can't wait.
Hi, this is Carissa inviting you to a town hall meeting this Friday, April 26th at the Harvey Eagles Club. Join us for a social hour from 6 to 7 and a presentation by Mike Blessum at 7 o'clock. Learn about the issues of our state and how the current Legislative Assembly has been voting. Meet the District 14 endorsed Republican candidates Jason Steidel, Larry Dandaran, and myself, Carissa Grothy. Special guests include Congressional candidate Rick Becker and candidate for State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jim Bartlett. Bring your questions for the candidates. We hope to see you all on Friday.
Hi, this is Courtney with Bassett Motors. Start your spring off right in a new Chevy. Take advantage of over $9,000 of combined rebates and discounts on a 2024 Custom Silverado or 2.9 financing for 72 months for qualified buyers. Let go of the wheel and enjoy hands-free driver's assistance with Super Cruise, available on High Country trim models with over 400,000 miles of compatible roads. Schedule a test drive today at 701-652-2955. Bassett Motors, where our customers send their friends.
Let's join the fun at Crafty's Bar and Grill in beautiful downtown Harvey now.
Monday through Friday is a two-hour happy hour from 3:30 to 5:30 and enjoy drink specials daily. The grill is open for lunch from 11 to 2 and supper from 5 to 9 with delicious specials Monday through Friday. And Saturdays, Crafty serves up breakfast at 8 a.m. with the grill open from 8 to 2 and 5 tonight. Check out their Facebook page, Crafty's Bar and Grill, for all their special happenings. Crafty's Bar and Grill, downtown Harvey. Join the fun.
Fox News update at the bottom of the hour, brought to you by Warehouse Grocery and Roberta Flock Storm.
It's the big savings event all this week at Harvey Warehouse Grocery. 85% lean ground beef in the family pack, $4.19 a pound. Grapefruit Caracara or navel oranges in a 3 to 4 pound bag, only $3.99. Bone-in pork shoulder steak from Charmin's Reserve Premium, $2.49 a pound. Bellatoria Ultra Thin Crust Pizzas, $2 for $10. Hormel Black Label Sliced Bacon in the one-pound package, only $4.99 this week. Charmin's Reserve Premium Boneless Pork Tenderloins, $2.99 a pound. Our Family Ketchup, $2.49 a jar this week. In the produce section, fresh bicolor sweet corn, $3 for $2. These and many other specials when you shop at Warehouse Grocery on Harvey's West Edge.
I'm D'Angelosi. The Supreme Court is hearing former President Trump's claim of presidential immunity in his federal election interference case. Trump attorney John Sauer.
Prosecuting the president for his official acts is an innovation with no foothold in history or tradition and incompatible with our constitutional structure.
But Michael Dreeben, the attorney for the special counsel, argues.
Such presidential immunity has no foundation in the Constitution. The framers knew too well the dangers of a king who could do no wrong.
The former president isn't in Washington. He has another day of court in Manhattan in his hush money trial, speaking earlier outside the courtroom.
They've taken constitutional right away with a gag order. That's all it is. It's election interference. This whole thing is election interference.
Mr. Trump is charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. America's listening to Fox News.
I just got the State Farm Personal Price Plan on my car insurance.
So you told your agent you play the bagpipes for your dog?
What? No, I didn't get that personal. My agent just helped me create an affordable price just for me. Okay, let me show you what I've been working on. Hey, Buster!
Contact Roberta Storm with State Farm Insurance in Harvey at 324-4318.
Prices vary by state. Options selected by customer. Availability and eligibility may vary.
News and information when you need it. We are the Mix 1470 KHND. Harvey, it's the Get It Off Your Chest radio talk show. Conservative talk for Central North Dakota.
And we're on here with the second hour of the Get It Off Your Chest talk show. And we're speaking with Rick Becker. And welcome back. How are you doing so far? Did you take a little break?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good. Now, one of the questions I know you're going to get asked, because I've heard this question many times. Can you explain where your stance is with our tax situation as far as property taxes go? You know, that's something that, you know, we've talked about on the radio here a few times over the last few months, but we're getting close to the point where we got a lot of people that are really anxious about this tax.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm the chairman of the sponsoring committee for the measure that's currently out and getting signatures to eliminate property tax as we know it in North Dakota.
Right.
And it's an amazing opportunity. North Dakota, there are other states that are looking at doing it, other states that are literally getting their signatures for measures as well. Mm-hmm. But North Dakota is the only state that can do it without raising other taxes to replace the property tax and without losing any services. So it's a great opportunity. There's a lot of consternation out there because of things that the opposition has been saying. A lot of the opposition are people that like all of this money that's coming into the state and how the state is spending it, and they can kind of, you know, pass it down, and they come up with these programs. And so a lot of lobbyists love it, and a lot of organizations love it because they are the recipients of some of this extra money that the state has. But we all know the state has a tremendous amount of revenue, and they are spending it like drunken sailors.
Yeah.
So we have an opportunity because they promised us 12 years ago, the legislature, when the previous property tax measure came up, the legislators and lobbyists said, hey, listen, we heard you. Vote no on this. It's not a good idea, but we will take care of it. We're going to give you tax relief, and we're going to provide tax reform. 12 years they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I was there for a lot of it, and a lot of good measures came up, and they all failed. They all failed. The legislators voted them down. So now it's up to the citizens themselves, ourselves, to give us ourselves the tax relief and the tax reform that we deserve.
Yep, I agree.
So it's a great opportunity. So what would happen is that everything that people pay in property tax now, they will no longer need to pay. They're going to be able to keep that money in their pocket. Right, spend it however they want because the state is going to replace it. No strings attached. They can't ask any questions. There's no begging, coming to Bismarck and begging for money. They just hand over what every city, county, and township was getting, and that's the tax relief. And the citizens keep that every single year. $1 billion in our economy to be spent to really drive the economy. And it's a good thing for every single person living in North Dakota.
But now,
the second part though is the reform.
Right.
The cities, counties, and townships are going to still be in full charge of their budget, however much money they need for their budget, however much money they need to raise. If they need to raise more money than what the state is giving at that 2025 level, which of course they will, things cost more, budgets go up, but they're going to be able to go back to the citizens and raise that money just like they would have before, except not with the valuation-based property tax.
Mm-hmm.
No one understands the mill levies. No one agrees with or likes the valuation and how the value of our properties go up, and we can't figure out how the heck that even happened.
Right.
And then when they do go up and we're paying more property taxes, the city and county commissioners say, hey, we didn't raise your taxes. Don't look at us. Look at the state. Mm-hmm. And the state says, hey, don't look at us. Look at your city and county commissioners. That we get away from that with this. We get something that's more transparent and more accessible. So how could it possibly be a bad idea when the citizens of North Dakota get to keep $1 billion in their pocket every year? We force the state with their excess money to replace the property tax, to give us the relief, and we free up the cities and counties to be able to continue raising the revenue the way they need, but in a better manner.
Now, one question I would have to ask is, if they're going to replace, if we're going to have those no property tax there, and we're going to replace that money, where does that money come from?
Well, whatever subdivision you want to pick, city, county, township,
right,
school
right.
district, fire district, whatever, right? So where the question is, we first have to ask, where are they getting the money from now? They're getting the money from the people who live in that, in
yes,
that subdivision.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And so they're going to be held whole by the state for that money up through 2024, 25. Okay. The money they need beyond that. So what they would have increased in property taxes, right, that just that increase is what they're still going to have to go back to the people for. So the same people effectively are going to be paying for the increase in the budget, mm-hmm. whether it's the old way with property tax or whether it's the new way by raising a new tax or a new fee. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, we're not talking about a new tax that gobbles up all the reform. The new tax or the new way of taxing or the fee is just for that small percentage of an increase. So it's impossible to say we can't raise the money, because you would have raised the money from your own people,
right,
and you
right.
still will.
Right.
The beauty of it is that the people now have more of a say. They can step up and say, wait a minute, we don't necessarily agree with this.
Right.
You know, because when you have a tax or a fee that a city or county implements, that's at a public meeting with public input. You can stand up and you can say, no, this is wasteful spending. Where the heck can you do that with property tax? Where mm-hmm. where can you do that when your property gets an increase in valuation? You know, you got nothing.
Yep. No. Well, I know that it, for a lot of people, it's a complex thing, but I think what you've just laid out pretty well explains it. It's not really complex. They're still able to go back, and if you need something for your county, it can still be increased, but it won't be the way it used to be with the valuation and having the valuation property tax system.
Yeah, and the mill levy and all that.
Yeah.
And if the citizens disagree with it, they have a much better chance of getting the elected officials to think twice about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Anything else that you were in the process when you're campaigning out there that have come up besides property taxes and, you know, any of the other items that are on people's minds?
No, well, you know, there's one thing. They say in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. So you never want to defend yourself too much. But I will say this. There's a lot of money going out to ads right now that are claiming that I voted against funding the wall, and I voted to defund the police. And I just got to say, these are manipulations. They're complete lies, 100% lies. And I don't want to spend many minutes discussing it or explaining it. But I just want to warn people. There are some, the Pat Finken and his Brighter Future Alliance, propagandists of almost limitless bounds. And people should be very, very cautious when you're hearing those Brighter Future Alliance ads. They're baloney, they're lies, and it's really shameful to do that kind of thing in North Dakota.
You have to consider the source in that particular instance, but I understand.
Focusing on the positive here, things are looking fantastic. Like I say, we're raising great money, we've got great endorsements, we're going all around the state spreading the message, and the message is we need someone with integrity, with principles, who will go out to Washington, D.C. and fight for the people of North Dakota.
Right, right.
Not lay down, not go along to get along, but to fight and to never stop fighting, and that person is me.
There you go. Now, one of the things that that people always say, too, when they talk about politicians, they go, but, you know, gee, when the politician gets into office, he seems to change. Is that what do you think about that?
I think that's true in some cases, but you know what I think happens a lot is that what we get are people that say what they're going to be like. They don't have a good record, right?
Yeah, right, right.
I tell you what, all the Republicans practically sound the same. You know, I'm a conservative, but I stand for this and I stand for that. Well, if they're not tested, if they don't have a record, then who knows what's going to happen?
Right.
When they get to Washington, D.C., that's the first time they're being tested. It's not surprising they're going to collapse under the pressure, and certainly collapse because they think they might get more power or more money or more whatever it might be. And that's why it's really good when you do have an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'll say it again, like myself, 10 years. I have got such a strong record. People either love me or hate me. Why? Because I stand for something, and I stood for something every single year I was in the legislature for 10 years. That's what I take to Washington, D.C. So I think it's a matter of, do people change? Yeah, sometimes. But for the most part, it's not that they changed. It's just that we never really knew who they were.
That's a good point, a very good point. And one of the things that I've talked about over the last year or so is the voter apathy. I mean, we've voted a lot of people into office in North Dakota only because that's who would voted for the last time, and we're not going to take our time to figure out who's going to be. They'll be just fine until he's dead. And that's kind of well, it's kind of the way it's been. But we end up sending the same people all there all the time. Now we at least see some breakthroughs with some new people, as we see in District 14, some of these other districts coming out there, new people coming out, getting fresh ideas, getting out there. And then, of course, with the cutting of the length of time people can serve, depending where you're at in North Dakota, that also helps. Keeping that refreshed, I think, is so important. Other people have ideas, too. And I think it's good that we're able to get people like yourself and others to stand up and take the time, because it does take time, and it takes money, and it does take money. But to stand up and say, this is what we need in North Dakota.
Yep. Well, yeah, and the thing is, we know that the status quo has not been working. The status quo is exactly what got us into the situation we're currently at, both in North Dakota and in the United States. So if anything, we all recognize that what we've been doing, the people we've been sending, it hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. We've got to change what we're doing if we're going to save our country.
Exactly. Now, you're going to be in Harvey here tomorrow. You'll be here about 7 o'clock to do a meeting, I believe. I think they're going to have some kind of a social about 6, but people have a chance to come and literally ask you the question face-to-face. That's a huge deal. That's the grassroots deal.
I absolutely encourage people to come ask questions. Mm-hmm. Whether you think you like me or think you don't like me, doesn't matter. If you got a question, I will answer it to the very best of my ability.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah, transparency is something that we need more in government. And you get that when you are talking to the person in sight, on site, face to face. You can then ask a question, and then you get a response from them. It's not like I'll send it over to the newspaper, the editorial person will write about it, then they'll read about it later 2 weeks from now. That's not what it is. It's right there. In your chance to talk to Rick Becker is coming up tomorrow night, and do it. Believe me, I don't think anybody is going to waste any amount of time. You're going to ask some questions, and you're going to get asked some questions and the answers that are going to mean something to somebody rather than what somebody wrote in a newspaper on the other side of the state.
Yep, exactly right. I will be there. I hope to see everyone there as well. It's a great opportunity.
Yes. And again, that's Eagles, and it's at 7 o'clock is the meeting time for tomorrow night. And I believe they're going to do a social or just kind of a gathering where everybody can sit and chat a little bit for that first hour at 6 and 7. So that'll be going down. We're looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, and safe travels.
That sounds great. And for your listeners, I encourage you to go to rickbecker2024.com. A lot of information there. And we talked about property tax. Go to endpropertytax.com. I tell you what, we sure could use some help getting signatures. Okay. We got to make that deadline, and donations will help get us there.
All right. Yeah, and that's something, too, that you can talk about, again, with Rick Becker tomorrow night. This is an opportunity that you're going to have, and you need to take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, anything else we need to cover? I think we're just about at the end of the hour here for us. We got market reports coming up here in a moment, and I'm sure we'll see how they're doing. That's another thing that makes a big impact in North Dakota is the markets. And we are an agricultural state. That's our number one industry. We're also an oil state, but agriculture swings a lot of votes back and forth.
Yeah. Well, agriculture is the backbone. It'll always be there, even when oil goes away.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate your time spending with us, and we will talk to you again probably tomorrow night sometime. And that's at the Eagles at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock for a social hour. And again, Rick Becker, thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
All right. And that's Rick Becker, and we are...